Today, I had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Bethany, founder of Core Methods. We explored how her organization is making a difference for families, students, and schools by addressing challenging behaviors in a unique way. Dr. Bethany's approach goes beyond the typical strategies helping students understand and process their emotions while making thoughtful choices about their behaviors. We also dive into the rising incidence of behavioral issues in younger children and what might be contributing to this trend. You won't want to miss this insightful episode.
Welcome to the Foundations of Learning podcast. I hope to inspire you to actively participate in your child's learning journey, fostering a love for knowledge and nurturing the skills necessary for success in a rapidly changing world.
You actually started out, which I think is very interesting. You started out as a high school biology and earth science teacher, and then you directed your dissertation toward behavior change. So what made you want to go from just a normal high school teacher in the classroom to I'm going to look into behaviors?
Oh my goodness. So I have to say that starting off, I was not a very good teacher. And I think that that really propelled me to say, gosh, I have to really look at it, this a different way. The first few days that I was teaching, my students were up and running around and getting into fist fights and doing all sorts of things, but not learning. And I said, my gosh, I don't understand why I'm not able to connect with these students and get them to really sit down and want to learn. And a lot of it was their basic needs were not being met. These kids were coming in hungry, tired, a lot of them had trauma experiences. They didn't feel safe. And so when they came into my classroom, the last thing they wanted to do was learn. So I really had to reroute how I taught. I ended up doing a lot of breakfast programs and snack programs and before school programs and lunch programs so that one, kids could get fed. Two, they had a safe place to go that wasn't a place where fighting was occurring because there was a lot of fighting in the school that I was working at. Where they could really feel safe and connect. And through that, they started to do schoolwork. So, and it wasn't like it happened on the first day. It was after a few tries, they were able to do that. And I realized that that was the population I just felt most connected to. These kids who really wanted to do well, but didn't have the resources to do well and had had some really challenging experiences. I just felt really connected to them. And when I ended up leaving that school and teaching at another school, it wasn't the same population of kids. And I just didn't feel as connected to the curriculum or to wanting to deliver it. And at that point, I said, I've got to look more at working in the behavior field. This is really where I'm supposed to be. And I really feel much more connected to that. And I couldn't do both. Mm-hmm. I tried to continue staying up on the curriculum. And as many teachers know, that's really difficult to stay up just on the current curriculum, but to do that and follow all the most progressive techniques in the behavior field, it just wasn't possible.
Yeah. And that whole story kind of honestly resonates with me because I have an early childhood education degree. So you were in the high school realm and I was in like the littles realm. And I've only worked at Title I schools. That's the only place that I've ever worked. And unfortunately, when you are in those Title I schools, there are the kids that have more trauma, their hierarchy of needs, you know, their basic needs are generally not being met. And it does, it comes with a lot of behaviors that you wouldn't necessarily see in Truly. Other schools. Not saying that there aren't behaviors in other schools, because there definitely is. But I do get what you're saying there, because I also kind of went on a journey when I had really, really hard classes that I was like, what am I doing wrong? Like, I can't get teaching done because I have all of these behaviors. And, you know, it looks very different in high school than it does with those littles. Those littles, it's more, you know, you'll have those tantrums and you'll have like, they'll just all of a sudden lose it and they just cannot regulate themselves. And they're already struggling to, you know, be good at self-regulation when they're really little.
Yeah, 100%.
Their needs not being met and their traumas and all of these things, it just causes this big explosion. And so I totally feel you on that. And I actually wanted to go down a route of behavior. So I'm like really excited to talk to you today because that was one thing that I was so intrigued by. And I feel you on that too. Like I love like the students that were my very, very hardest, like we would butt heads a really long time,
your favorites.
But then they were always my favorite students, my most memorable students, and yeah. they at the end of the year, it turned into like, I hate you. Like, this is the worst, you know, to, I love you, Mrs. Flint. You're the best, you know? So it was like always this like give and take. And so I totally understand honestly why you would do that, because I'm also like, that was, I love looking into psychology and mindfulness and like how we can help these kids to get their basic needs so that they can actually learn at school. So I love that.
Learn and be able to develop skills that are going to actually work for them for the rest of their lives. Like, you know, so many times I say teaching them regulation, they need this forever, especially healthy regulation. I mean, so many learn maladaptive regulation skills and they'll say, oh, you know, these video games help me or this helps me. And it's like, ooh, that's so harsh on your brain and everything. So it's just giving them tools that are going to be work for them for the rest of their lives. It's so, so critical. And every time when I'm working in every classroom and working with teachers, I'm like, you're doing so much more, because they're going to remember this for the next 30, 40, 50 years. That you taught them this skill, they might not remember that they learned how to spell this particular word correctly, or they memorized their threes tables or whatever it might be, but they will remember the technique that you taught them that helped them get through. Yes.
And I remember too, like in the beginning, it felt like I wasn't, it felt contradictory because it was like, I'm not teaching them the curriculum, but so many of my kids needed extra help in that self-regulation and mindfulness and like coping strategies so that when they would get to a point where they wanted to explode, they could bring themselves back down without me helping them. And so I spent a lot of my day like actually teaching them these like self-regulation skills and coping skills. And my favorite book that I, or books that I read to those kids were, I think it's called The Feeling Spot. It's like a series of books.
Yes, I love those. I love that
so
series of books.
Good for like kindergartners and first graders, because it was just, it was a good story that we could do like a read aloud. So reading comprehension, like killing two birds with one stone. And then also giving them that like really simple way to help them to regulate. And I like printed off like these posters and everything for each of them. So like, if you feel angry, like here's your steps to do. If you feel, and I had like pictures. And so it was so helpful because it was funny. I would like see the kids look up at the posters and then they would like start doing the thing, like, and they could like calm themselves down, but it took a long time to get there. But then we ended up learning more. So I didn't have as many behaviors and it felt contradictory in the beginning.
But that's exactly, I tell teachers that all the time, and you've nailed it right on the head, Shelly. That's like, as soon as they start to pick up some of these skills, their ability to learn is exponentially so much higher. And they are just, they're killing it. It's there's an 8-year-old I've been working with this school year, and you know, was barely able to read at the start of the school year, really dysregulated. Always told me that she was having a bad day. Interesting. And the other day she's reading off the front of these book covers, and I was like, wow, she wasn't on this level a few weeks ago. And she looked at me and she said, this has been the best week I've ever had. And I was like, I believe it. Like, she's just all of a sudden, her academic acceleration is just, it's like mountains ahead of where it was. And she's just so much more happy, relaxed in her body, connecting, which is not something I've seen with her in the past, like connecting with several kids too, not just hyper focusing on one. And it's just little simple strategies that are getting it there, you know, as far as her being able to be more successful.
Yes. And I'm not a professional at this. I'm like our brain and like where it's going, like what's happening in our brains. But like, I know that our emotions, especially like anger, or if there's any trauma or anxiety or anything like that, it's like, it kind of goes back to our monkey brains essentially. Right. And so we can't, it like takes up too much energy in our brain to even be able to learn. So it's literally like Charlie Brown talking to him, right? Like it's just, like they can't actually absorb what's happening because there's too much going on in their brain and they're like, I'm out. And so once you can clear those pathways and help them to cope, it's like all of a sudden they're like, oh, I can do this. I can learn and they can connect and they can do all of these things. So I think that it's amazing what you're doing because, as a first year teacher, it was something that I wasn't necessarily expecting. Like, it's not something that they really go hard on.
They don't tell you it when you're in school. They're like, it'll be great.
Yeah, like here, yeah. Like reward consequences, positive reinforcement, negative consequence, yeah. Like, you know, like those things. But then they don't really prepare you for like, here are some strategies that you could implement with kids that might have trauma or anxiety, or, you know, kids that just are having a really hard time with self-regulation, or they're not being fed, or their sleep's not good, or whatever it is, right? There's so many things that it's not just like they come to school and it's this perfect day and we teach what we teach. And, you know, there's so much more that goes into it that they don't ever talk about in college. And I wish that they did.
And they really need to, because it's like those basic classroom management skills that they've taught for years and years. That's great. That applies to maybe 20% of the kids that are now coming mm-hmm. to school. The other 80% are the kids who are intense. It's so flip-flopped from where we were at 10, yeah. 20 years ago. But unfortunately, the training end of it has not caught up to that. And I think that's why so many educators are feeling so much more burdened the last 5 years or so than they have been before. It's exhausting because they're dealing with all these students that the traditional techniques just don't work. Administrators constantly tell me, you know, I've got, you know, these percentage of students that are taking up 80% of my time, and they're repeat offenders. And it's like, yeah, that's because those old strategies just don't work. We need new strategies. And the simple way that I usually explain it to people is, if the lower part of the brain is excited and is going, like the fear, anger, whatever, the job of that part of the brain is to shut everything above it mm-hmm. down. So it's going to say, nope, can't think. Nope, can't reason. Nope, can't problem solve. And it's going to go through all those aspects, and they can't get back there until they can get blood flow to those mm-hmm. areas. So the simple things you've got to think of is, how do I get blood flow to the front of the brain? Well, I could engage them in some high intensity movement for a few seconds. I could try to connect with them. I could have them do something that's appreciation, productivity, as well as connection. Those three things will help to push blood flow to the front of the brain. So those are some super simple strategies. And doing something like that is as simple as when you're taking roll call saying, what's your favorite meal? Okay, hand your paper to the kid next to you. And that will increase blood mm-hmm. flow to that front part of the brain. There's just some super simple strategies, but unfortunately, those aren't things that are really given out to teachers nowadays. They're like, nope, if they do this, then you do this, then you do this with the consequence.
Yeah, and they're like, I don't care. Like,
yeah, what else you got?
Yeah, they're like, positive reinforcement.
This was entertaining. Give me more.
I don't care. Yeah,
I don't care as long as it's
and so for them it's like whatever. Like, yeah. And I will say too, like one thing that I learned, I went on my own journeys. Like there wasn't good professional developments or really anyone that I felt like even in the district that was really there to help me to figure these things out. So I kind of just went down my own rabbit holes. And one thing was like, they talked about getting them to come back to their body and like ground themselves. And so it was like talking about like, yeah. Do you feel your legs? Do you feel your hands? Do you feel your arms? Do you feel your toes? Can you wiggle your fingers? Can you wiggle your toes? And kind of like bringing them back down from like wherever they're at in their head and bringing them back down into their body. And that like really helped a lot of, not all of them, but a lot of my littles that would have those outbursts. I could get them to calm down very quickly if I could get them to just like think about your fingers, wiggle your fingers, think about your toes, wiggle your toes, and like getting them to come back to their body. But yeah, it's wild that it's not taught. And I do think that there are just everyone in the schools right now are kind of like, what do we do with this? And this kind of brings me to another question, because I'm always racking my brain talking to teachers that have taught for 20 years or whatever, right? And I'm asking them, like, has it always been this way? Is this like normal? Because obviously, like, I didn't start teaching until 2019. And so it was something that I was like, this is crazy. Like, how have you guys been in this for 20 years? Because I am exhausted. Like, I don't know how you've done this. So, and when I've talked to them, they're like, oh, it's never been like this bad. Like it's gotten so much worse. So what do you think is causing these extreme behaviors that we are seeing in the classroom today, and why we didn't see them even 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago?
Yeah. So there's a combination of factors. And I will say, I've been in the field for almost 30 years. So it's, there's definitely a combination of factors. And 20 years ago or so, I was in high schools every single day working with high school students. That's pretty much what I did. Elementary, there was a few bumps here and there. There was your occasional kid that got angry and had a meltdown, but not that much. Today, I spend 90% of my time in preschools and elementary schools. And the reason why is because these behaviors are so much more intense at such a younger age. And there's been a number of things that have changed both culturally as well as, you know, environmentally in the last 5 years or more that I think has significantly impacted our youth today, as well as the adults around them, of whether or not they're even regulated. So one of the big things is, you know, phones. We're on our phones all the time. You know, we're on social medias all the time. We're checking things all the time. We don't have to wait for anything. So one, kids aren't getting a lot of feedback from their caregivers because of that. They're still getting a lot of feedback, but it's not necessarily the right kind of feedback all the time. So in addition to that, they're also on devices. So they're also checking these things. They're also, their brains are being stimulated in that way. And when you're getting dopamine hit after dopamine hit, those receptors get tired and they get worn out, and then you need more feedback in order to get more intensity from it. In addition to that, kids are eating a lot more processed diets. There's a lot more foods that have GMOs. There's a lot more things like that going on. And so the level of toxicity of exposure for people has increased exponentially. And you put that onto a developing body, that significantly impacts them. There is many times when we've worked with students where I've said, just let me change their diet for 3 weeks. And 3 weeks later, I'm like, you don't need to ever see us again. Like, we'd love to see you, but you don't need us. There's no behavioral issues. Your child is developmentally on track at this point. You know, it really was a toxin issue that was going on. So there's toxicity. There is connection, and then there's overexposure, the stimulation of overexposure of things, and that can go hand in hand with toxicity too. But just being overexposed to junk lighting, awful sound, you know, those sorts of things stress the nervous system out and really end up resulting in other things. It could come out as illnesses. It could come out as behavioral issues. It could come out in a variety of ways. It just depends on how the body is going to process that information coming out. But those overexposures are really significant. And I'll see this with students a lot when I go in to observe them, and they'll try to pay attention, and then they get, their bodies get uncomfortable, and they move to the windows, or they'll move to the doorways, and people don't really pick up on it. And I'll say, they're trying to get out of the stimulation. They're trying to get away from the sound of the heaters. They're trying to get away from the overhead projector noise. And they're trying to get away from the fluorescent lights, but they just can't figure out how to get their bodies away from that sort of exposure. And they couldn't express to you why, but it is really trying to get themselves away from those things. So those things have been compounded so significantly. I mean, we're on devices. We have to be for work and for learning so much more than we've ever had to be in the past. But unfortunately, our brains don't necessarily love that type of learning all the time. It's really stressful. It can cause headaches and all of those other things. But for kids too, it's really challenging for them because they're not learning the social skills that they were in the past in order to connect because they're working so much on devices. So a lot of factors, definitely different from what we saw 10, 20 years ago. You know, 20 years ago, I could use applied behavioral analysis all day long, and that's where we started. Today, I almost never pull it out. That it's just not the appropriate choice for what I'm doing for work. I'm pulling out sensory supports and regulation supports and all of those things before I can ever get to the point of compliance, because I've got to get them feeling safe, then feeling regulated, then teach them some higher skills. Then I worry about compliance.
Oh my goodness. I just love what you're saying. Like, it's such a breath of fresh air working in. So I worked in two different districts, and neither of them ever, like, it was the nutrition thing, like, drove me crazy. I'm not going to lie to you, because I am, like, down, yeah. Like, I've been going down that rabbit hole just for my own health in the last, like, 5 to 7 years-ish and like understanding like what's in our food and all of that stuff. And it would drive me crazy when I had these kids that were just out of control. And I was like trying all the things, like everything I could think of. And so then eventually I'd be like, okay, I need help. Like, I don't know what else to do. And they would want me to like give them like a Skittle, like every 2 minutes when they would do something I want. And I'm like, I'm not giving them a Skittle. That's just going to make it worse. Like, please, no Skittles. And like, they just, it, like, it was something that they were like, no, like, that's just how we do it. Like, this is the way that we do things, you know? And so I love what you're doing. And I wish that I could like clone you and put you in every single school so that we could really like,
I so appreciate that.
That's like what I was thinking is like, it has to do something with our food and like our technology. And I do
think it's dehydration too. I'm telling you, like, there, it's something like more than 80% of the kids who are diagnosed with ADHD suffer from severe dehydration. So if we could just get kids to drink, and that's what I tell people this all the time. You can't change in schools. You cannot change what they're eating half the time. But what you can do is encourage them to drink water. And, you know, that one will help to flush their system. Just filling up a water bottle. Water is a natural regulator for all humans. So use it. Like, have the kid go fill water bottles. Have them fill water bottles for you, for everyone in the class. Water the plants. Do whatever. But encourage them to drink water. And if you can't get them to drink water, add fruit to it. Add a little bit of vitamin C powder, whatever you need to do. Because some of the kids are like, so many kids will tell me, I hate the way it tastes. It feels slimy. And I'm like, that's because you haven't drank plain water before. They're so not used to that, that it's like they have to almost like set themselves up to have that because they're so used to things being high in sugar and high in salt. And so when they try to have something to eat or drink that doesn't have that, it like their taste buds are like, absolutely not.
And I just saw something. So I don't know if you've been following at all, like what they've been doing with like people going out and protesting against like Kellogg's and all of these different brands that are putting all of these like, you know, dyes in our foods and toxins in our foods. And there's actually a bill right now that they're trying to get passed for school lunches, actually, so that we can get all of these like dyes and chemicals out of the food and have it be like real whole foods, organic, like all of the things in the schools. And I'm like, and you can like go and sign a like a little petition thing or whatever to help get it passed. I can't even remember right now who is in charge of it. I want to say that if you went to, oh, what's his name? I think it's Callie Means, Callie, and then like Means. I think him and his sister are like the top two people that are like really trying to push this right now in the schools. And I think that they're ones that shared that that bill is trying to go through, which I think is amazing.
It would be phenomenal if something like that could happen. I have a couple of friends who own a company that creates products, and it's mainly like pancakes and stuff like that, but they're filled with all sorts of medicinal mushrooms and all sorts of stuff like that. And they've been working with a lot of grassroots organizations to try to get their products into more hands because of a lot of the concerns about foods that people are consuming, especially in those more of those institutional settings like in schools and things like that. So, but it's a huge challenge. And I will say that there's many times when I'm working with students, if I can change their diet, a lot of the behavior.
Yeah. And what was frustrating for me too, is like coming in the mornings and I would see what they were eating for breakfast. And I would see a lot of the kids that had these behavior problems and they're eating like sugar on sugar on sugar on like processed carbs. Like, and I was just like, oh, this is going to make our day so hard just because it stimulates more than people really think. And then they come in, they're like crazy, they can't regulate, and then they crash, and then it's like they need another, and it's just like this roller coaster of just it drove me crazy. So when I saw that the other day, I was like, yes, this will be so helpful. And I don't think people understand how crucial it is to have proper nutrition, because our brains are, it mostly needs fat. Like, that is what your brain is made out of mostly. It's water, it's fat, it's minerals. And if you're not getting that, your brain is not going to be able to function properly. So I think that is amazing.
Yeah, I do with my kids in the morning. So I have two young girls that are adopted, and they both of them don't want to eat in the morning. One of them will eat, the other one doesn't like it. And I'm like, that's fine, but you've got to at least take your oils. And so we have a little shot glass, and they have like half of it has, you know, fish oil, and the other half has MCT oil. And I'm like, you have to at least do that, you know, before you get to school, and then you can have something, you know, out of your box once you get there and everything. But it's like, you absolutely, like, dehydration, the right fats. And we don't get a lot of the right fats. We have a lot of hydrogenated oils, which are so bad for our brain development and for healing and everything else and all that. So that those things are huge in the middle schools right now, which is really a big problem in high schools too, is the energy drinks, the kids coming in with the energy drinks, which are so not good for their kidneys and not good for their functioning. And they'll be like, yeah, but it helps me wake up right away. And I'm like, yeah, but then, you know, an hour later, you can't function the rest of the day and you're exhausted and everything else. And a lot of the schools have moved to banning those, which is fantastic. You know, that they've taken some action with that, because it's just put that stress on the kidneys at such a young age. It's just not so good for them.
And I think it's hard too. I mean, because I mean, as a teenager, I ate like crap. Like I, you know, had the McDonald's and the Taco Most Time and the energy drinks and the, like, just such bad food that I was eating. And it really wasn't until my senior year, I was on drill team. And so my coach was like, you guys are athletes. Like, you will act like athletes, you will eat like athletes. And she was like amazing. Like, she had a nutritionist come in and like talk about like healthy fats and proteins, and like, you're an athlete, you need to eat like it. And she, like, seriously, like, if she knew that we were like eating McDonald's or Taco Time or energy drinks or anything like that, like before practice or before a competition or anything, she's like, you're running 5 laps, go. Like, we're not doing this. Like, you are an athlete, you're gonna feed your body like it's an athlete. And like, she was so strict.
Absolutely.
But it opened my eyes to like, oh, like, maybe I'm not eating properly to actually be the athlete that I should be. And anyway, so I really, truly, like, at the time I was like, you're crazy. But now I'm like, oh my gosh, you were so smart.
Food is fuel, you know, it's, you know, that's, it's huge. And, you know, you've got to be able to function for the, whatever the, you know, activity is at hand, and you've got to be able to feed your body and your brain so that it can function for it.
So another question I had, and it kind of, I mean, so I have been going down a rabbit hole as well, just as far as like littles go, because I have an early child education degree. So I had to student teach in early childhood and then also in elementary school. So I actually have experience in like toddler classrooms and preschool classrooms, and then all the way up to until like third grade. So like, I've kind of been in that whole realm. And obviously the structure of how our school system is set up has always kind of been the same. Like, there's not much that has changed except for maybe the rigor, as far as like what we are expecting of kids younger and younger and younger. And so have you ever, like, I guess, thought, like, is it possible that even for some of these littles that it's like, they're just not getting enough of that free playtime, or that we are trying to like push them too soon when they're not quite ready for it, and they just need more movement, more playtime, and more time really just to explore their interests and things like that? Like, do you think that that could also have an effect on the behaviors?
Huge. I think it has a huge effect on it. And I often teach this when I'm doing professional development in schools. I'll say, yeah, we have to have safety first, then regulation, then play, then connection. And sometimes we have connection at all the levels, then higher skills. And the reason why is because if we can't get to play, we can't get to learn. Because if we can't get to play, they're just memorizing things in their short-term memory. But if we can get to play, then they're actually, when they're learning, they're problem solving and they're able to pass it to long-term learning. But if they can't get to that level, if they can't even get to play, and this is, I see this with a lot of kids with really high anxiety. If they can't get to that play level, they might be able to spit out information, you know, and do the work in front of them, but they're not holding it for any period of time. They're not taking it with them into the next week and the next lesson. And the next day, typically the teacher is telling me, I had to reteach them that full lesson. It was like they didn't even listen, even though they were able to do the assignment. And I'm like, absolutely. Because if they can't get to that level, and with that too, it's like, I mean, I'm guilty of it just as much as the next parent. Like, we overschedule our kids like crazy. You know, my 11-year-old is constantly like, oh, I'm going to schedule myself for this, and I'm going to be in chorus, and I'm trying out for theater, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing this. And I'm like, whoa, girl, there's only so many nights in a week. Whereas my 9-year-old's like, I think I'll do this and this, and that's enough for me. I'm like, good for you. Good for you for your healthy boundaries. I'm loving it. But it's like, we are so, you know, ingrained into us that we have to do this, and we have to do this more, and we have to get our kids involved in this and this and this, that we almost have cut out a lot of that time that they need for the independent play. And the same thing in school, because you're held to all these curriculums and you're like, oh gosh, lunch is coming. I've got to teach this assignment. I need to make sure they get it. Wow. I can see four of them are not attuned to what I'm doing right now. Ooh, how do I rein them back in? Oh, I might have lost them. Oh, this one's taking off to the bathroom. You know, and there's all those things going on. And you're like, ah. And whereas sometimes it's better to just say, we're going to take 15 minutes. You guys have free time. You can either go to the listening station. You can do this. You can do that. Here are your choices. We'll regroup. And sometimes the teacher needs that time to regroup for themselves, so they're not, you know, stumbling through it too, to get them back on track. It's really tough though, when you're held to all the standards that you're being held to, because you're constantly feeling like, if I'm not doing that, I'm failing, instead of, I'm doing this to teach them how to connect and have better social skills and how to problem solve. And we'll probably get more out of them in a few minutes. It's really hard to think that way when you know, I've got to get through this because next week is this, and then we have state testing, and
It is. And it, as an educator, like, you get, it's like, you know what they need, but then you have all these pressures on you of like, oh my gosh, and I have all these kids that are behind or whatever, and I need to get this content, like, they need to learn this, but then also they need to do this. And you just have so many things that it's like this anxiety at all times that you're like, I'm not doing enough, or I'm doing too much, and they need this, and then I don't have time for that.
Yep.
And it's just like compounding all of the time. And that's honestly like one of the reasons that I did leave teaching in like a normal public education sense, just because I was like, I am exhausted every single day, and I know what they need. It's like, I try to give it to them as much as I can, but then you're also on this like strict schedule, and some schools are even more strict than the schools that I've worked at, where they're like, every teacher has to be teaching this at 11 a.m. And I'm like, this is not how like a real human is going to like learn and do things, right? Like, we're not little robots here that we're like, okay, at 11 o'clock, always on the dot, we're going to be teaching this, and we're going to be, you know, on this day we're teaching this, and on this day we're teaching this, and like planning way, way ahead. And I get it, because like you said, we have these curriculums, we have state testing, and we're trying to get these kids to like, you know, learn all the things that they have to learn.
We want them to excel.
It's so frustrating. And I wish that there was a little bit of a change, at least for sure, for those littles, because I do sub and stuff now. And when I'm teaching the older kids, it's like so refreshing, because you can actually spend like a little bit more time, allowing them to socialize and things like that, because it's just like the things that you do, they're a little more independent. They can, the pace that you can go at is even a little bit faster. And so you actually have a little bit more time. But for those littles, like kindergarten, first grade, second grade, you are doing so much of the brunt work, because independent work for them is really hard to accomplish. I mean, they can do it if you are really good at like training them how to do it and all of that stuff. But it takes a lot of planning. It takes a lot of work. And you're not, I mean, it's going to be like mid-year before you can get to a point where like they can independently work and actually work for at least like 10 minutes, maybe 5-10 minutes, you know? And so you are just constantly like whole group, small group, like, you know, doing independent work, like doing all of these things. And it's like, I just don't have time. Like, how do I get them to get more playtime and all of that stuff, and mindfulness, and teaching coping strategies while I am trying to teach the curriculum? So yeah, that was,
it's super stressful. And it's one of the main reasons that I hear from teachers of why they want to leave the field. That, in them feeling at times like they don't have the support, like they're not given the tools to be successful. Like, I often will do trainings for districts where I'm just training the team. I'm training a team supporting a student who's really in crisis or something like that, or I'm training a program within a school. And the teachers will say, that's not fair. Why can't we get the training too? why don't we have the skills? Because if we had the skills, then those students wouldn't mm-hmm. need those programs or wouldn't need those teams. And they're 100% right every time. And it is, it causes huge burnout because they don't feel like it's always within their wheelhouse of being able to do it. And they do very much feel that kids have different challenges today. And they're like, I don't know if I can address those needs. And they can. Those are the people that we really need to keep. Those are the ones that we want so badly in those roles. And it's so tough for them because they're faced with so many feelings of self-doubt of how am I going to make this work with all the other demands? And they are being asked to do a million things.
Yeah, I loved teaching. I just hated like everything else about it. I was like, I love coming to work and teaching and, you know, connecting with these kids and doing all of that. But then it was just like everything else on top just like brings you, like pushes down on you over time. And it you're does. Just like, my mental health can't do it anymore. Like I'm physically right. sick because I cannot meet all of the needs that I feel like I need to meet, because I'm also that person that's like, I have to make sure that I'm doing everything I possibly can for these kids. And then it just like drains me mm-hmm. and then I have nothing else to give when I'm home. And so I'm like, I can't do this anymore. Yep. So let's talk a little bit about I don't know how to explain what you're an organization, I guess, that you've created called Core Methods. What is Core Methods' focus and mission?
So our mission is to create safety, so safety both psychologically and physically, so people can choose mm-hmm. their behaviors and really be the person that they want to be. So our organization provides supports to students with intensely disruptive behaviors, so aka kids who are being asked to leave public education, kids who are being asked to leave facilities and being told they have to go back to public education and public education is not prepared for them. That is our primary population as far as who we support. We create alternative education programs as well as train teams on how to safely integrate these students back into the general education setting. And we have about an 82% success rate. It usually takes about 3 months. And our staff go to different school districts and provide a lot of these supports. I do a lot of professional development. I do a lot of assessments on kids. And we're really looking at things from a different perspective. Like, what is the sensory need of this child? What is their body language telling us? Are they safe? They may tell you that they're safe, but I can tell you by how their eyes are slanted, by how they carry their chin that they're not. I can tell from their spinal alignment that they're dysregulated. And I can then turn around and give people the tips that they need in order to get this student safe, regulated, connected, and then on the path to learning the other skills to get them back to where they need to be.
Awesome. Like I said, I wish that I had even just found you like when I was teaching and just like begged my principal and the superintendent and all these people, like, please, 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 can we make this like a thing that we just get, or like a training that all of us get? Because I worked in a really small district when I actually left teaching. We had only, I think there was 6 elementary schools and I think there's 2 junior highs and like 1 high school, like super, super small, but they were all Title I, every single one of them. So I'm like, this would be amazing. Like for that district, like it would have been amazing because we obviously had a higher percentage of kids that had that trauma, the hierarchy of not being met, like even like food and things like that are not as great, like their nutrition isn't as great, like it's just unfortunately that is the case for a lot of these kids. And so I really wish that I would have known that you were even a thing.
And it's a lot of times it's we're teaching the staff these skills and I work for a very short time, usually directly with the student, but I'll teach them those skills and then the team will come back and say, hey, they went home and they taught their mom these skills. And their mother is now so much more regulated. She's able to come to team meetings. She's communicating with us. And this kid is doing so much better. And it's like, that's really what it's all about, is being able to get these strategies to more and more people so that more and more people feel safe, feel regulated, are able to actually engage in a way that's healthy for them and healthy for those around them in order to get back on track. And so that's part of the reason why we put a lot out on social media. We're constantly saying, like, here's how to read body language. You want to know if someone's going to get angry or aggressive with you? here's how you can tell. Here's the top 10 tips that they're going to get aggressive. And it's not just for youth or for students. It's also if, you know, if you're at Walmart and someone comes in and you're like, that seems, my energy is telling me things aren't right. So it can give you tips for stuff like that as well. But we're giving them those so that they know when they can provide an intervention and how to get things back on track to where they need to be, as well as we realize that teachers, they've got a class of whatever, 18, 25, 30 kids, whatever it may be, and that they don't see everything that's going on. So how do you pick up on the few things that are going to lead you to have your lesson not go well or going to lead you to a classroom crisis? So how do you know when that's happening? And a lot of the techniques that we're teaching are really about how to spot those little things that are coming about, so that they can make sure that they head them off at the pass. Because we don't want to see people leave this profession. We don't want to see people feel like they're not being successful. Yeah. We want them to be the teacher that every kid comes back to and says, because of you, I now do this in my life. You changed my life. And that's because that's why people go into that profession. You know, they want to make a difference and they want to be able to change and they want to be able to have kids change the lives of those kids.
Yes, and I do love what you said about understanding body language, because I feel like I mean, over the years, I started to kind of learn like, okay, if a kid is, you know, starting to, you know, do X, Y, and Z, or I can feel the energy shift in their bodies or see the energy shift in their bodies, like, but it took me a lot of years to figure out like, oh, okay, this is going to be like, they're about to explode. There's like triggers happening, you know, but still, I mean, it's hard because you have a different class of kids every single year. And then you have to figure out which are the kids that are having a harder time, especially because like in our district, we had a lot of people move in, move out all the time. And so like, even if you had, you know, you would have maybe half of your class that other teachers in the school have actually had. And so you had like these new kids coming in, you had no clue like anything about them. And you would have to figure out like, okay, this kid is having a really hard time self-regulating, or this kid is doing this. And then you have to kind of learn, okay, I can tell based on what he's doing or she's doing. Now she's starting to get escalated. Now I need to help her to de-escalate and things like that. And it would take a lot of time. And so sometimes you're like halfway through the year and then finally you're like, okay, I think I kind of understand what your triggers are. Obviously, like you said, as an educator, you can't see everything that's going on in the classroom. And so you have to like constantly, like if you have students that you know are those students that are prone to have those outbursts or whatever, you kind of have to watch them more frequently so that you can watch their body language.
Absolutely.
But it's just, it's so hard. Yep. So that would be really cool to have like a list of, you know, things of like, hey, here is usually what it looks like when a child is about to get angry or when they're having anxiety or when they're whatever, so that you can just spot those without having to like kind of guess and then learn and then guess and then learn.
Yeah. And we have a lot of those. We do a lot of like the top 10 lists of how a child is going to present if they're moving to aggression, the top 10 list of how someone who's going to go into shutdown mode due to anxiety, the top 10 list of how to treat someone who is a hyper aroused learner or a hypo aroused learner, like how to work with those populations and everything. Cause those are easy for people to digest, and they can also put them in a full classroom basis. So they can say, okay, yeah, I have preschoolers, so they're all hyper aroused all day long. So, okay, it says to store their items underneath the chairs or in the lowest cubbies, so they have to bend over to pick them up. Okay, good to know. So, and then with high schoolers, it says, okay, yeah, most of them are hypo aroused when they come in. So, okay, it says to have them start standing if possible. So we want to make sure that their chairs are on top of their desk if the chairs are separated from the desk and aren't connected and those sorts of things, so that they're standing for a longer period of time than they would be. So it's just really simple things that can be very effective, because it's a lot about layout and how to just have the progression of the class go through certain really simple strategies and seeing different things. We've been so lucky where we've been able to study under, you know, some experts in the body language field, like Paul Ekman and Janine Driver, Joe Navarro, and Mac Fulfer, and just some really well, you know, established people who know a ton about body language that were able to teach it very, very quickly. So oftentimes if I walk into a school and a kid is in crisis mode, you know, in a fight or something like that, just my body stance alone, they stop. And people will say, how do you do that? And I'm like, it's just my stance. And I can teach you that. You know, it's how I'm, where my hands are placed. My thumbs are pointed up because it conveys confidence. My head is slightly tilted to the left because it conveys empathy. My chin is slightly tilted to the right so that it conveys attention. Yes, it's all about how I'm using my body as a tool in order to make that person feel safe and feel, and then move them to regulation by providing a strategy for that. But you've got to get them to safety first.
Yes, and that's so important to talk about, like your own energies that you're putting off and your own, like what you're doing. And I remember, like, my last year was probably it was the hardest year. It was the year that broke me. And I was like, I literally cannot do this anymore. Like, I just can't. But it was one of those things where, like, I had to constantly regulate myself because I needed to make sure that I was the solid person in the room, that I was the person that was regulated, and that so that I could actually help them. And so, like, there were times where, like, I just wanted to be like, I'm just done. Like, I wanted to just, like, explode with them because it was just, like, so much, you know, and you have so many littles that you're trying to help regulate. And so I realized, like, it's so important how I am. And so I was, like, constantly, like, even doing the things that I was teaching them as I'm, like, trying to help them regulate, I'm, like, taking deep breaths and, like, you know, in and out and everything is okay, as I'm, like, trying to be calm and confident as they're, like, having freak outs, you know, and then you maybe have another freak out over here and you're just like, everything is fine and we are at peace and we are going to help these littles regulate. And so I think that is super important that people need to understand too, that their own energies and body language that they're putting off to the kids can really escalate or de-escalate because they need that figure to help them.
Yeah. You're a co-regulator. Mm-hmm. You're stepping in to actually help them regulate themselves. And so your body language and your body mannerisms are going to do that. So whether or not it propels it towards crisis or it mm-hmm. mitigates it is going to, you have that ability, you have that power. So, you know, I'm often telling people, like, if you've got to explode, that's totally fine. Call for support, go use the bathroom.
Yes. And do it in there. Yes, and there was times where...
And then come back stronger because yes. It's times when you
and
need to.
My team teacher, she was amazing. And like if I had a time where I was like, I physically cannot regulate myself right now because it's just been such a hard day. Like I would actually just like literally call her up on the phone. And like if we had an aide or someone or anyone, I would just be like, hey, can you contact the principal? Or can you, like, if I couldn't fit, like get in contact with them or whoever it was, or even just saying like, hey, you know, sometimes it would work if I just said, hey friend, go over to Miss Montgomery's classroom, like just go over there and you can, you know, and then it would just get them out of that environment. And sometimes even that would help. And then it would give me time to like, and like regulate. And so me and my team teacher did that a lot. Like if we had kids that were just like, we were at a point of like, okay, they're escalating. We're having a hard time regulating because it's been a really hard day. We would just like switch kids and we just like, you know what, go over there. And they'd have like their little things and they would just go over. And it was the same. I mean, we were both teaching the same curriculum. And so it wasn't like a huge deal to us and we had extra supplies. And so they would just come over. We just kind of switch kids throughout the day if we were having a hard day. And that was super, super helpful. So like, if you are a teacher and you have a beautiful teammate that's like amazing and you can just be like, you know what, for 5 minutes, I just need you to go over there. And it helps them because it changes the environment that they're in. And it's a different person that's, you know, handling it. And then you have time to also have a break. But I've also done that where I've literally like walked them down the hallway and I've like gone to the office and I'm like, they're going to be in the gym running around. I need like 5 minutes to just compose myself. Can you please just go watch them? And I would just like leave them. And I'm like, I need a minute. So I think that's super important that teachers do use that because I feel
absolutely.
Like they have a hard time.
No, absolutely. No, when you yes. need to step out. Yeah. Yeah. They do. They feel so bad. They're always, and anytime I step in and I'm like, I got this. And they're like, I'm so sorry, Bethany. I'm so sorry. I'm like, don't be sorry. This is my job. Yes. I love my job. Don't be sorry. Please. If you see me in the building and there is something going on, grab me. It doesn't matter if the student's on my caseload or not. I will step in always. And so will any of my team. And it just that having that mentality and help other people also mm-hmm. adopt that mentality so that they can jump in and give a hand too, because that's really what it takes to build a community mm-hmm. that supports each
and
other.
And it's just so important. And I feel like a lot, and maybe this is just me, I don't know. I feel like because teachers, they just want to help and they want to be like the best that they can be. And, you know, their teachers generally like are the most loving and caring humans, like seriously on the planet. Like they're amazing people, right? But we also, I think, put a lot of pressure on ourselves to be perfect all the time. And like we can do this, like we can do this on our own. And we have a harder time, I think, asking for help because we feel like we're failing. Like we're failing as a teacher. We should be able to do it. I should be able to handle everything that's thrown at me and all the things that I need to do. And so when you have to ask for help, it's almost like I suck. I'm a terrible teacher. Like I obviously can't do this, right? When it's really not that, it's just that you are literally handling 30 little humans that have their own things going on. You're trying to teach them. You're a human that has emotions and feelings and you need to regulate too. And so that was one thing like in my last year that really helped me was like finally being like, okay, I need help. Like, can I please send this chat? And then she was like, yeah, send him anytime you want. Like, I don't care, you know? And so
that's awesome. Yeah. Having that relationship is so
yes,
great.
I really wish that, I mean, I've been pretty blessed that over the years of teaching, I've had really good teammates, but I do know that sometimes there are teammates that are like, very like, close my door. Don't talk to me. I'm on my own island. I don't want, you know, and I wish that every educator was just like, you know what? We are every single grade, no matter what grade you're in, like we're all a team and we can all help each other. Even if it was like, you know what? I have a first grader that's struggling, like I'm going to send them over to second grade because maybe even the other teacher it's not helping, like, and just sending them over to a different environment. Like if we can all just like be a team, then I think it would help so much. And I also think that what you're doing would help parents because it also does start in the home too. And that home and school connection is so, so important. And if you can make sure that what you're doing in school is the same as what's happening at home, that it's going to help it. It's going to change their behaviors even faster because there is that cohesiveness and they know what to expect from all the adults in their life. And so I feel like too, like we need to make sure that parents are learning these same things that you're doing in the school and even asking parents like, hey, this is what's happening. And, you know, what are you doing that helps? Because they know their kid their very best. And so I really think that that home and school connection is so important.
We truly do. Yeah. I mean, we created an online training program about 4 years ago, and we actually did it because I was spending about 10 to 20 hours a week on the phone with parents trying to describe how to do certain maneuvers and things like that, like how to stand, how to hold their hands, what they should be doing, how they should say it, what type of tone to use. And I was like, wow, this is really labor intensive. And I was like, but we were seeing results because the parents who were open to it were like, yeah, I'm doing it. And then we would be like, wow, it's a month and this student no longer needs us. And, you know, I mean, the parents are killing it. And so at that point, we started putting it all like into a program so that we could give parents access to this program when they had a student with us so that they could do that, even though it was also then being sold to school districts in order for them to be able to access these tools. But being able to access the behavior boot camp that we own, that was huge for parents because they were able to be like, oh, yep, I tried this and that worked. And as soon as they feel like some one or two things starts to work, then it becomes second nature. And then they're just moving through it so naturally. It's such a great thing. And it helps to really build those bridges between the schools, because oftentimes when I'm called in, the relationship between the family and the school is no longer a nice relationship. It's no longer very copacetic. So I'm coming in into this conflictual situation and trying to help rebuild that bridge between the two. And that's tough sometimes because it becomes more about what mm-hmm. they did in order to do that versus these were what happened and how are we going to work with that? What information have we learned from it and how can we move forward to help this child become successful? And so once it turned in that direction, then people start to get on board in a different way and they start to work together instead of feeling like it's us against them. It's all of us in the same boat trying to work to make this child's life better and validating the effort that the teacher is putting in. the work the parents are putting in at home to make sure that it happens, and all of those other pieces, it just changes the dynamic 1,000-fold and allows the child to be successful. Because as soon as they feel like there's splitting going on, then they're like, ooh, I can get feedback from both those places, and the negative feedback's not so much on me, it's on them. Then it becomes so much more significant. So we've got to get that dynamic changed right away.
Yes, and I also think that, like, the parents, I really feel for the parents that have kids that, like, you know, they just need a little bit extra support and they need more self-regulation, or maybe they're a little more hyperactive or whatever is going on, right? Or they have sensory issues or whatever it is that's going on. And I so feel for those parents, because when you're getting a call from the school, it's usually like, you know, you're like, oh, what's happening again? Like, oh my God.
So you look in your phone and you see that number coming through,
yeah,
and you're like,
oh my gosh, what happened now? You know?
Yeah. And every parent holds their breath.
And I feel so bad because I would work really hard to try to like find one thing in the day that was like amazing, right? So that I could just call them just for something amazing, because I didn't want to be calling them all the time, because I'm like, okay, so we had another outburst today. This is what we did. This is what we tried, you know, whatever. So I think it's also important to like make sure, even though it's exhausting, to like, okay, what is, you know, one thing that they did good today, and like making sure you're talking to the parents, because you have so many kids that you want to do that for, and like you have planning and, you know, meetings, and like it's just so much. But it does make a really big difference, because those parents are like, oh, like, because they feel like their kid, like they're failing, probably, I would assume. I mean, I don't have any kids of my own right now. I'm actually pregnant right now with my first baby.
Congratulations.
And still feel like sometimes I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have eaten that. Like, that was not like good for my kid. Or like, there's the guilt that you feel for just like the dumbest thing.
The guilt.
That it's
constant.
Like.
And it doesn't matter how minor it is or how much separated it is from you. As a parent, you always feel guilty when your child does something.
Yeah, like, I could do better. It's me. Or like, and so I just so feel for those parents. And so I also think, like, because I was looking at the training you have, that behavior boot camp that provides like the strategies and stuff. And I just think that, like I said, it's so important that parents and schools, like, we're all having like this kind of like universal, I guess, I don't know, toolbox of how we can help these kids so that it's cohesive, so that parents can, you know, also not feel like, oh, I'm doing something wrong, because they might not even be doing something wrong, right? Like, nobody in this situation is really doing something wrong. We're all just doing our best and trying to help this child to be the very best that they can be. And sometimes we just need help and we are out of our realm, because, you know, you have a baby and it's like, there's no handbook for how to help your child with anything.
It's just better strategies. Like, and you learn it through trial and error. I mean, I'm in this field, one, because I was a teacher and everything, but also my son struggled a lot behaviorally when he was about 0 to 18 months, and it wasn't a picnic for many years. But he got kicked out of 3 daycares, and he got kicked out because he was so aggressive and he was biting other kids. And I was like, what is going on? And so I was like, I got to learn more about this. And I found a school that was like a sensory school and everything else. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And he did so well. And I was like, this is my happy place. Like, I would hang out there all the time and I'd be like, oh, I got to go to work. I just want to be here with you guys. And that was like, hugely, like, it's such a huge awakening. And I was like, man, schools should implement a lot of these things. Like, we should start looking at doing these. And that was a part of the journey that I went on. And then I did foster care for years. And I was like, it's not okay that these kids are suffering to the extent that they're suffering. The pain that they're going through is not okay. We should have some responsibility to help them have less pain. And so a lot of my journey has been because of these different experiences I've had with children that I've said, we've got to make their lives better. We owe it to them. We owe it to their families. We owe it to the caretakers. We owe it to the teachers to make it so that these kids can be more successful and they can be.
Yes. And go you for doing that, because I, like I said, like, I would have times where I was just so, like, the emotion I would feel for these kids that were going through some of the things that I could never imagine going through in my life. And they're, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, and they're having to go through these like such hard things. I, like I said, I would never in a million years think. And like, I can just see the pain and the anger and the anxiety, and like, it's like, you're helpless. Like, it's like, I don't know how to help you. And it's like, I just want to give you a big hug. And like, I don't know. Like, and so there were times where like, it would make me so emotional. Like, I would cry because I just felt so, so bad for these kids. And I'm like, I just want to help you. And I want you to feel happy and have hope and learn and like all of the things. So I think that's so awesome. And I think that not only like obviously in that moment, like you said, it helps everyone around them, it helps them, but it helps them in the future, right? So now you have kids that may have possibly gone down not a very good path, you know, maybe had issues later on as an adult, you know, because we do know that a lot of people that have like depression, anxiety and things like that, right, it can turn into like substance abuse and like different things down the road, right? And so like if we
can, health issues,
yeah, health issues, yeah, if we can help fix that problem in the very, very beginning, like think about where we could even be as a society later on, right? And like
communities
not have so
of
much pain in this world.
Yep, 100%. That's why we do what we do, because we're like that. We very much want people to feel connected to their communities and feel successful, even after they leave school, even if their school journey is short. Mm-hmm. We want them to feel some level of success that this does not define you.
Yes.
This one experience.
Yes.
Hopefully it propels you to better things. And that's what we want to see. But so many kids feel like school's not made for me. And it's kind of not at this point. And we'll see a lot of changes in the education world and probably in the next 10 to 20 years, I'm sure many. And so, but while it's catching up, we want to make sure that we don't lose too many people in the process.
Yeah, and I am hopeful that the education system is going to shift in the way that it is, because I mean, when we really did have like the structure that we have today, I mean, that was really back in like, you know, the 1920s, like during the industrial age and things like that. And we are just so far past what they, you know, deemed as what the society needed, I guess, for school, that it's like, and I think that's what drove me crazy too, is I was like, oh my gosh, we could be doing so much better. Like, why are we stuck? I felt like I was stuck in the dark ages almost, you know, and I'm doing research on all of these different, like philosophies and educational philosophies and things like that to look into like different ways to educate. Right. And so I was like, why are we not implementing these things? Like, there should be a little bit. Yeah, I know it takes time, and it's just like, they don't have time. Like, these are kids. Like, they don't have the time.
We don't, unfortunately. It's a system, and systems take so long to change. But, you know, the more grassroots we have doing what they're doing, mm-hmm. The more change we're going to see. And, you know, and it's like, people are always like, oh, well, there's this other behavior company. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's great. You know, I'm like, we have so much work where we are constantly having to pass things to other people and places. And our theory is really like, we don't care. We just want the strategies and techniques to get out there, yes, so that we can help support more people. Mm-hmm. That's our ultimate goal. And, you know, how they get out there, you know, there's lots of different means for that. But we just want to see people being able to feel physically and mentally safe and be able to actually, you know, choose behaviors and not feel like their life is happening to them, but they are creating their life.
Yes, I love that. So there were a couple of things on your website that I was looking at. You have like nurtured heart approach, appreciative inquiry, video self-modeling. You've got like the ACT or ACT method. You have dialectical behavior therapy, like all of those things. Are those the things that like, or the strategies that you teach within like the behavior boot camp, or are these things that you kind of...
It is. It's things that I teach, and it's also very student specific at times, but I do have elements of that in the behavior boot camp too. But when we set up programs, I look at every student and I say, what does this kiddo need? Where are the gaps? How can we help them? And what are the family needs and what are the educators need around them? And then we select what we're going to use to ensure that we're creating the best model for them in those times. There's a lot of really standard things that we use with every person, like the stance of safety and the top 10 tips for safety and regulation and doing those. And those sorts of things we use with every single student. But as far as like therapeutic supports and things like that, we're not a therapeutic company, we're a behavioral company. But therapeutic supports, you know, if I have a student who is very anxious and has really in their head and so on and so forth, then I'm probably going to take some activities from ACT training that I've done and stuff like that. But if I have a student who's more in their body and is having a lot of challenges with that and may show, you know, higher signs of aggression and those sorts of things, I'm probably going to look at DBT. So it's just depends on the student as to, you know, what we're doing. We do a lot of also EMDR work with them too, as far as being able to say, okay, what is your safe place? And let's talk about those. So we take the best elements of the best strategies that are out there and incorporate those to really make sure that the student is getting what they need in as quick a time as possible, so that they can get back into the general education setting or not have to leave it. Sometimes I'm coming in and doing an assessment on a kid that's really struggling and hasn't yet self-isolated or left the general academic setting, and we want them to stay there. So the last, you know, everything we're doing is to keep them in that area.
Awesome. So do you ask, like every client that you have, like, do you ask the parents about their nutrition and like their sleep habits and things like that every
time? If I can, yes. I mean, sometimes, and in with sleep, it's funny. I often don't need to. And the same thing with nutrition, I can usually tell, like, okay. I look at the fingernail beds, I'm looking at their sensitivity to light. I'm looking at how they're processing when they're drinking water, how they're swallowing. I can, even despite what they tell me, I can tell what is actually true, based on the things that I see about their body and everything. And I can, the same thing with sleep. Like, I'll ask just for verification, but I can tell by their body mannerisms what's going on with sleep. Usually I'm about 99% of the time you can tell by looking at the body and everything. And there's a lot of times where their sleep quality is not going to improve in the home environment, in which case we're implementing more restorative techniques and things like that to help their nervous system rest, because we know that they're not going to be able to get more sleep at home. They may have three other kids sleeping in the same bedroom as them, and, you know, they may have to share a bed. There may be other things that are going to keep them from having good quality sleep, and we know that. So we're helping them with that. The same thing with food. We know that we might not be able to change it in the home environment, but we do have some control over some of the things at school.
Yeah.
So we can help with those pieces.
Yes. And I would have kids that were so tired sometimes that I knew that there was no point in like it just even having them try to stay awake. That I would literally tell them, I'm like, look, I'm going to set a timer for 10 minutes. Just put your head down on the desk and just take a nap. Like, we're just going to let you sleep for 10 minutes because I know that we're not going to get anywhere. You're just going to get more and more grumpy.
Instead of calling it nap time, you know, we'll just call it vagus nerve stimulation, not nap time.
Yes. There you go. Now you put a fancy word on it. I just called it nap time. I was like, we're just going to take a nap for 10 minutes and we're going to move on after that. And usually, like, after that 10 minutes, like, they just had that time to sit there and close their eyes. They would all of a sudden, they were like, all right, I'm ready to learn. Like, let's go, you know? And it was just like a 10-minute thing. It was so simple.
And oftentimes the reason why is because, especially if they put their heads down on the desk, that gives them some vagus nerve stimulation and that pushes their body into a restorative pose. So even though it's only 10 minutes, they're not even getting into a sleep cycle where they're releasing their growth hormones. But because they're stimulating the vagus nerve, their body thinks that they've rested for like an hour. Or two.
See, you're scientific about it. And I was just like trial and error. I'm like, you know what? This worked last time. Let's try it again.
It did. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I have no idea why it works. I just know it does. So let's do it.
100%.
So it looks like they put in your little PDF that they had sent me that you are actually coming out with a book in 2025. They didn't tell me like a release date exactly of when it's coming out, but it's called Ease the Pain in the Classroom. With this book, I just want to know a little bit more about like what this book is. Who is this book for? Is it only for teachers? Would parents benefit from it? And so on.
So my parent book is actually in the works right now too.
Oh,
so
okay.
That one is coming out in 2026 or 2027.
Oh, okay.
So this one, Ease the Pain in the Classroom, is actually a guide to regulation and safety. So the techniques are really going to be about how to assess body language, how to, like, what body language do you need to assess? What can you ignore? Or not necessarily ignore, but not have to pay attention to. So what body language is telling you? What are the top signs of anger? What are the top signs of that you can do to convey safety so that your individual around you feels safe? What are the top things for regulation? How to regulate kids, in, you know, very quickly in a classroom setting? You know, how to implement higher skills? How to teach mindfulness without them knowing they're learning mindfulness? You know, and all those other little pieces on how to put those elements in so that it sets up your classroom for learning, so that the student can actually, you can then teach. So the guide is really, it's very, a lot of it's short lists of like 1 through 10 of how to do those things bulleted. And a lot of them are visuals, because we know teachers don't have a lot of time, mm-hmm. and they want to be able to just pick it up and be like, okay, yep, this kid came in angry. Okay. Oh, that's page 71. Okay. Yes. Oh, yep. I see all that. Oh, 72. I do this. Okay, great. So that they can just get on those activities very, very quickly and use it. And each of the sections are kind of standalone so that they can use them on their own if they needed to on the fly in order to get their classroom where they needed to be. Like if they were like, oh my gosh, my class came in from recess and they're wired. Like they may have some strategies, but they're like, what I've been using hasn't worked. Mm-hmm. Okay. It says, turn off the lights, turn on a video of water, have them play 7-Up, do the, you know, all these different things that are going to help to regulate them and get them on track. So yes, we are in the third rounds of drafts right now. So we're hoping maybe late winter or spring, it will be coming out. And if we, I spent last week, I think I cut 60 pages out of it. So it's at page about 180 now. We want to get it down to about 150 if we can, to make it really simple and cohesive.
That's amazing. Like I said, I wish that I would have had your book. I wish your book was out like 20 years ago, even, because like I said, I literally had no, I couldn't tell you why certain things work, and it took, oh, every year I just learned more and more, like, okay, this is what I can do. This is, you know, if I do this, then this helps do this. And if I do, I have no idea the scientific, you know, things behind it. I just knew that, like, okay, this works most of the time. So we're going to try this. And it is true. Like sometimes when my kids would come in from recess, I would just already have the lights completely dimmed, because it's just something about, you know, being out at recess and them coming in, it just takes them a second to like come down from their really excitement does. And their play, yeah. and all of that. And so I would sometimes just have very like nice piano music that was super relaxing playing with my lights dimmed, and they would come in and we would not ever start on anything rigorous. It was like, we're just going to come in, I have some blocks out, play with your blocks for a minute, you know, like 5 minutes of just coming down from where we are, and then we would get into the, but like I said, that took me a long time to figure out. It wasn't like first year we're out here doing this. Like it was like very last year. I was like, oh, I get it now. So having
makes me so
like
sad
that.
For first year teachers. they're like having to figure everything out in those first, plus do all their planning and everything else. It's like,
there's so much to figure out. If you are new to teaching, you're trying to figure out curriculums. You're trying to figure out like all of the behavior stuff. You're trying to figure out even just like how to do your day to day. Like there's just so much that's going on that I feel like you are not prepared for. I feel like honestly, it was like somebody just threw you off the boat and they were like, swim. And you're like, I don't know how. So I think that's amazing that you're having this simplified book that can help, because like we kind of talked at the very beginning, if you have these strategies in your toolbox, kids will be able to learn, you will be able to teach, and it takes time out of your day that you think is like, okay, this, like, we're wasting time. But it is so not a waste of time, because once you start doing it and you realize like, oh, if I take 5 minutes, just 5 minutes to do this with even the whole class, like even if you're like, well, only a couple of my kids need it, honestly, it's not going to hurt any of the other kids if they do it as well, because it's a great thing for them to learn if they ever get to that point. Like then they just have these strategies. And so I just started to learn, like, even though it feels like those 5 minutes, those 10 minutes or 15 minutes in the day feel like I'm not, like I'm wasting my time because I'm not teaching content or whatever it is, the curriculum, it changed the trajectory of the day. And it was just
huge.
Something that helped the kids so much. So like I said, I'm so grateful that you're writing this book, and I am grateful for the teachers that are going to be coming into the field. And if I ever know of a teacher that's new, I'm going to be like, you need to read this book. Okay. I don't care what you do. Just read this book. Okay. You'll figure everything else out, but this is the hardest part.
Yeah, it is. It is the hardest part. And it's one of the number one reasons why teachers don't make it to the second or third year. Why they leave is because they feel like I didn't sign up for this. This was not what I expected at all. Like, nobody told me this. Part of it in that, for so many of them, it's so overwhelming, and sometimes they get a great mentor and somebody can really help them walk through this process, but many of them don't, or they don't have that availability. And for them, it's like, they just feel like, is this how it's really going to be? Am I really going to feel like I'm struggling with this all the time? I know I sure did. So, I think it's so important for people to feel like there are so many things that you may not have the background in, but there are ways to get that knowledge.
Yes. And I think that's amazing. And like I said, I lasted four. I didn't even get to the five. Like, I lasted 4 years, and I was like, whew.
You got over the hardest part, though.
I did. Like, people kept telling me, they're like, it's just going to get easier, like, as you go. Like, you got through, like, the brunt of it. I was like,
you did.
Usually
after year two to three, it's like, it's a different.
It is a different. Like, my fourth year, like I said, I definitely felt like I had teaching kind of down. I mean, there was so much that I still needed to learn. But, however, I did feel a little bit more, I guess, prepared for that year, until I like literally got like just the hardest behaviors I've ever had. And I bless them. Like, I literally, like I said, I loved these kids. Like, they were my favorite kids. I still to this day, like, talk about them. Like, I truly, they have a place in my heart. All my students do, but those are the kids that like are just like seared into your brain, you know? And
oh, yeah, I know. I have many of those.
It did break me. It broke me. And, like, my husband and I wanted to start a family and everything. And I was like, you know what? Like, I want to be able to put full force into my kids and everything. And so I was like, we're just going to call it quits. We're going to go a different route. Like, I'm going to do online tutoring. I'm going to do, like, just a podcast, even just to talk about, like, education and things that I learned, and hopefully help anybody that's, you know, coming into education or whatever, and creating phonics resources based on, like, my own learning experience and the science of reading and all this stuff. And I was like, I can do so much to help outside of the classroom and not have to deal with what I'm dealing with, and give my family my full and undivided attention. So what would be the number one piece of advice that you would provide to parents or educators that are struggling with children that may have those like super disruptive behaviors, or even just like sensory issues, things like that?
Show empathy. I know it's tough, especially when they're super angry, super frustrated, they're damaging property of yours, or they're trying to damage you, or whatever it may be, or they're being disrespectful or whatever. Show empathy. So oftentimes the empathy is the thing that will stop the behavior. And oftentimes empathy is the thing that will bring them back, because those kiddos come back and they have to feel received. And so showing empathy is so important. And I know it's hard, because when they're doing something, your tendency is to say, you need to stop that, or you know what you need to do, so on and so forth. But instead saying, I know you're frustrated, what can I do to help you? Oftentimes can really turn things around. And it also shows them that I'm in control of me. I feel perfectly comfortable. Mm-hmm. I'm just worried about you. And it changes that dynamic with them, so that they trust you and you become a collaborator instead of somebody enforcing something.
That's amazing. I love that. I really do. Because it really does. It changes, like we even talked about with regulating yourself, right? Like, if you are regulated, then they know that because you are almost like their safety at that point in time, because they're so out of control. And they, I think, sometimes scare themselves, like how out of control that they are. And so if you are regulated, then they're like, oh, she is my safety. Like, she is in control of herself. And if she's in control of herself, like, I can control myself. You know what I'm saying? So that's great advice. Okay.
Yeah. And it's hard. I know it's hard when people are frustrated, but it is crucial to getting things back on track.
It is. It's really hard to keep yourself together when you've got a child that's punching you and kicking you or pinching you or throwing something at you. And you just have to kind of stand there and be like, I'm so sorry you're feeling frustrated, but I'm here to help you. You know, maybe once, you know, try doing your breathing. Can you breathe with me? Can you breathe in? Can you breathe out? Do you feel, you know, like just staying calm is, it's pretty exhausting. And when you're doing all day, exhausting. Every single day, and you're just constantly having to be that regulator, it does get exhausting, but it is, you become their safety. And I think that your energy also feeds into their energy. And then they start to like de-escalate themselves too.
And it comes back around. The other students then start to model your behavior, yes, as well. And so do the other educators. And it has a cumulative effect. And then you don't see it anymore. That's why we end up leaving schools. We only usually are in a school for about 2 years at max. And then they don't have any tier three kids. And we leave and go to another district. We do not stay long term. We don't need to. So, and we go to the school and we'll say, oh, yep, it's April. We know we said June, but all your tier three kids are no longer on our caseload. Do you want us to stay and do this and this? Or we could leave. Or we could go to another school in your district. And that is usually critical for success of everybody, because they need to get their houses back. They should have their own places. We're an outside contractor. We're not meant to be there long term.
Yes.
So it's healthy for them. Once they know the skills, then we fade away into the background.
Yes. That's amazing. Like I said, I love that you are out there doing this, and I am just so excited that I can put this podcast out to the world so that anybody can just get your services, or even just buy your boot camp or whatever it is, like start small, who cares? Like, I just think that's so amazing. And I think that you're doing amazing things. And I think you're going to help a lot of teachers to stay in the education system as well. And I think you're going to help a lot of parents and just everyone, and the students and so on. So that's amazing. So where can people find you and continue to learn from you?
So the easiest place to find us is on the Behavior Bootcamp, either on social media or our website, thebehaviorbootcamp.com. Those are usually the easiest and quickest places to find us. There is also Dr. B, the sensory expert, on YouTube as well, but we also have the Behavior Bootcamp on YouTube also.
Awesome. Well, it has been such a pleasure talking to you. And like I said, I am just so excited that other people have the chance to learn from you. And I just have loved this conversation today. And I think it's going to help a lot of people. Like I said, parents, educators, doesn't matter who it is, I think it's going to help them. So thank you so much. And I will put all of the links to your website, to your YouTube and all of that good stuff. I'll put it down in the show notes so people can go down and click on those links and start to learn from you, because I think it's going to help our society in the future too. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Great to see you. Yep.
Bye.
Bye-bye.